So how about, no, I got nothing.
Welcome to the Xanadu Cinema Pleasure Dome with Melissa Kircher and Wendy Bowlesby.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Xanadu Cinema Pleasure Dome. This is Melissa, and I have a quick note before we move on to this week's actual recording. We recorded this podcast under less than ideal conditions, so you will notice that this week's audio is not that great. A comedy of errors and sleep deprivation meant that we were forced to record in an attic room during a party with a Rock Band microphone, just so we could capture an episode with artist Megan Murphy before she left Minneapolis the next day. And when I say Rock Band microphone, I mean a microphone from the video game Rock Band. I do not recommend recording a podcast with a Rock Band microphone. We were able to scrub most of the static out of the recording and boost the volume, but that means the recording sometimes sounds like we recorded inside an oil drum. So, sorry about that. I did what I could. It was still a very fun episode to record, so I hope you will still enjoy it despite our technical difficulties. Thanks!
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of the Xanadu Cinema Pleasure Dome. I am one of your hosts, Wendy Bowlesby. That is
Melissa Kircher.
And we are joined tonight by our very special guest, Megan!
Hey, guys. Happy to be here.
Yay!
So happy.
So, Megan is one of our Butt-Numathon buddies. You've heard us talk about Butt-Numathon ad nauseum. I know. Thank you for being patient. But Megan is super-duper awesome. She lives in Rochester, New York.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, I got that right. Rochester, New York, so way across the continent from us, but she came into town for Convergence, which you also heard us talk about ad nauseum, and we had a super good time, and now we're having a podcast.
Yay! Podcast party.
Yeah,
podcast
party. We are currently in Romeo Czar's house in like a little corner bedroom at 12:30 in the morning, not meaning like midnight just passed, and at a there's a party outside. We're still
and the hell with them. We're doing the podcast. This is a cool party.
Yeah, this is the cool kids in here. Yeah.
And none of us have had enough sleep in the last 5 days. So yeah. This is just going to be awesome. We don't even need to drink this podcast. We're already there.
I already had a couple random beers. I don't know what I drank. So grab a beer.
Grab a beer. I have some Angry Orchard.
Yeah, okay, Angry Orchard Cider.
I got like lack of sleep and I got to get in a plane tomorrow. So I'm all emotionally messed up. So.
Yeah.
That's even better.
Even better. So you can just bring your emotional troubles to the table as well, listeners. It's all good, right? You can be a little like, I don't know, I'm a little fragile. Also, completely acceptable. I don't know what I'm saying. We're going to edit that out because we'll just fix it in post. Beep. All right. So Melissa, you introduce.
Yeah. We figured that we'd talk about horror movies
today.
Yeah. Because we haven't really talked about them on the podcast.
Yeah, we really haven't gotten into
horror
movies.
Which is weird.
Which is, yeah, downright bizarre given my proclivities and Wendy's.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
I mean, really. Yeah,
it's like the forgotten genre.
I know.
Like every genre person likes horror, but it always, it's like it has its own little conventions.
Yeah.
It's like own little people. Like, no. Come back in.
Yeah. No, it's okay. Everybody loves horror. But it's true. Even in my DVD cabinet, it's like, here's all my movies. Yeah. Well, and here's my little horror, like, down to the side. Yeah. Down here.
Although, yeah. I wouldn't say everybody likes horror. When I run into people that say they don't like a certain genre, they either pick on Westerns or horror. There are a lot of people with a lot of preconceived notions about horror in that. A lot of times, I think when people think of horror, they think of slasher films.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of distaste for slasher films, especially among people who grew up in the 80s when a lot of horror was just inundated with bad slasher movies.
Well, it was ridiculous. I'm sorry, slasher films, especially in the 80s, they were just dumb.
Well, yeah, there were a dime a dozen. There wasn't a whole lot of originality in most of them, and most of them were really misogynistic. You know, it was all about killing scantily clad teenagers.
Or they would, like, say, start off with a good idea. Like, say, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating movie, and then it just, well, the second movie is weird.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. Have you seen, there's like a three or four, oh God, I think it's even longer than three or four. It's a documentary. I think it's called Never Sleep Again.
Yes.
And it giggled through every single Nightmare on Elm Street movie, talking to everyone involved, like Wes Craven, Heather Langenkamp, and they have a whole part about the second movie. What's fascinating there is the director's like, oh no, there's no gay metaphor. I don't know what you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. The writer and apparently the actor, who I don't know if he had come out before he played the character, mm-hmm. they're all like, especially the writer's like, oh no, that stuff was intentional. That stuff, and if you watch the movie, there's no way it wasn't. I don't know what the director thought he was making. So that's passing on a whole another issue. But then, like, beyond that, and they kind of talk about it a bit in the documentary, is like ideas get stretched, you have to add more characters so you can kill more characters because you have to kill more people. And yeah, I think like every slasher kind of suffered from that diminishing returns. And if, you know, at a certain point, what's the point? Yeah.
What's the point other than to just gratuitously kill people with gore and blood involved?
Yeah.
And at that point, it becomes boring.
Yeah, exactly.
That is no longer interesting to me as a horror nerd.
So let's talk about these subgenres of horror for a minute. Like, what would you say are some of the other subgenres of horror under the classification of movies that would like to scare you or make you unhappy in that particular way?
I mean, I would say, you know, there's classic horror, like the Universal Monsters horror. There's like Cronenbergian bio horror. There are dozens and dozens and dozens of genres, but I'm just picking stuff.
There's a gothic Hammer horror.
Yeah.
Kind of a response to Universal.
Yes.
Very gothic. So would you say thrillers are part of horror?
I think they're a share. It depends on like what you're looking for in your horror. Sometimes when you say horror, maybe you don't, like, it depends what you mean. Because you can mean like teenager stuck in a cabin. Or you can mean like Rebecca.
Yeah.
Which is a terrifying idea. It's kind of like alone and someone's against you and this man that you marry, what's going on?
Well, okay, so Gaslight is a psychological horror, but is it a horror film? But it's like,
there's a gradient there.
Oh.
I wouldn't necessarily call most of Hitchcock's films horror films. I mean, definitely The Birds is a horror film.
Oh, yeah.
What about Psycho?
And Psycho is a horror film. Whereas something...
He's called the master of suspense.
He is called the master of suspense.
So suspense film.
He says suspense is just a classier way to say horror sometimes.
Okay, yeah, so... Like Topaz would be a suspense film.
Okay, so let's define our term in terms of horror. Like, if a thriller isn't a horror and a suspense isn't a horror, what does a horror have to do to be a horror? And I'm going to say horror so often that after a while it's just going to be horror.
Horror.
What's going to turn into Frank Miller?
I was once at the World Horror Convention.
Horror.
It's already started.
Now we're going to be Hodor.
Yeah, I was once at the World Horror Convention with
horror.
People like Neil Gaiman around, and Neil Gaiman was sitting on a panel, and I remember this very clearly, and he was going, I don't know how you Americans pronounce horror. It's supposed to be horror. Horror.
Oh.
And, you know, you don't bother with that last R, and now it's
horror.
Horror.
Horror. Horror. It's like hurry, only different.
And then, it makes sense in the British.
Horror.
It sounds genteel. I'm like, no, I'm talking about horror.
I'm talking about whores.
Yeah, I'm talking down and dirty, Neil Gaiman.
Yeah,
horror.
This isn't a metaphor. This is the shit.
Wouldn't it be funny, though, if you adopted that and, like, every time you said horror, it was horror, and suddenly it's like, for one word, briefly, you're British. Consistently. Horror. I am a huge fan of horror films.
I did that all that weekend.
Horror. Can I have a martini with my horror film?
I don't even know.
But yeah, so going back to the difference between suspense and horror, I think I keep going back to a quote by Stephen King. It's like there are levels of getting a reaction out of an audience. Mm. And like the finest and most refined and probably the sweetest of the sweet spots is terrify. The quote is, "I will try to terrify. If I cannot terrify, I will try to horrify. And if I cannot horrify, I will go for the gross out." So there's this gradient between terror and gross out, and horror is somewhere in between. So it's a combination of suspense.
Because I feel like suspense is more about terror.
Yeah. Yeah.
Terror.
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 Like some you got some terror in my horror film.
And the
film.
Film. It's made of aluminium.
Aluminium. And you pronounce the T's on words that you're not supposed to. Veil it and fill it. Do you hate the French so much? I feel like it's very personal at that point.
Fucking French taking off their T's and put that even, fucker back on there.
Even Americans say valet. And we called stuff freedom fries for a while. Holy crap, Britain. I like that definition. Yeah. But you're right. There is a difference between terror and horror, but yeah. I don't
I think it's a crossroads between being scared of the dark and squishing an eyeball. You know, there's somewhere in it's a very visceral intersection.
So so we're kind of going for the pornography definition of I kind of just know it when I feel it.
Yeah,
maybe suspense is what you don't know, and horror is you know what's in the dark and it's coming to get you.
I like that one.
Yeah,
I like that.
I can work with that. I'm sure I'll find like a dozen things that like oh yeah, but no, that's horror. But yeah. It's a place to start.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, it's amazing. Again, like same thing with westerns. The idea that maybe you just have seen some bad horror films.
There are, Lord knows, there are enough of them.
And that's enough to because I'm like, it's a giant genre. There is so much. I'm sure everyone could find something.
Well, but the problem is that the bad ones are so prevalent. It's actually, this is a genre that you have to wade through the shit to find the good stuff.
Oh, yeah. And it is a genre that is quite famous for not being so hot towards women and minorities.
Yeah.
It turns a lot of people off.
Yeah.
Just for that.
That's when you start getting to that, I think, particularly, say, as a woman or anyone other underserved group in a genre, is at a certain point you have to enjoy what you enjoy while acknowledging there's problems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is problematic. I like this movie, but this, and this. So you get to the point of that, or I'm not watching anything sometimes. And then things aren't going to get better if you don't watch, digest, and make your own.
Yeah.
You know? So you can't just, like, turn away. You have to, like, well, I'm going to go in, I'm going to wade in, find the good parts, and then Frankenstein them together. How appropriate.
Okay, so where do we want to start?
Well, let's see. We already talked Nightmare on Elm Street a little bit, so let's...
Which has a great female lead.
Yeah, it actually does.
Yeah, and I love that they... I don't know if you saw... what was the was it not the next night, the one that Wes Craven came back for? It was like the new Nightmare, or which actually
the ones further down the series.
He came back and made this movie about Heather Langenkamp, the actress, and you're right, and then like wanting to make this other this film again, and the idea that it kind of comes across that Wes is like Freddy is actually an element of this terror, of this like that almost like Jungian idea of fear, and he comes out in these scripts, and part of what is you've become kind of a symbol. You've become a symbol, and then this idea of like her as an actress and as a mother. In the film, she's a mother, and her kid starts seeing Freddy. And then you see this actual fear of both her as a mother and as an actress, like being defined by this role. And it's almost this idea of her fighting against something that defined her, embracing part of it, reclaiming part of her life. And I thought that was an interesting way for Wes to kind of come back and say, what else do I want to say in this story that I started and kind of went away? Like kind of got away from me. I want to get back to this idea of dealing with basic fear. Freddy as a symbol of fear, especially when you're asleep and you can't control it. And then adding motherhood to that and fame to that, I thought was really fascinating. Then it was, you know,
very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I would recommend it. I mean, I don't think it's perfect, but it is dealing with really interesting ideas, which is one of my favorite things of horror, is they can deal with ideas that you don't always get to. It's very metaphorical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think horror is really fascinating in that it really goes after the zeitgeist of whatever is happening in culture at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very, very topical.
Yeah.
You rarely see horror happen in a vacuum.
Yeah. Absolutely. So do you want to start on films that are problematic, or do you want to start on films that we feel like avoid some of those problems?
Well, I think, you know what?
If we're going to start, do them in order, we should start with problematic.
Yeah.
Because those are like the boring ones.
We didn't make
like
the
when,
list.
You know, when it's just like sorority girls and like the whole reason is just see their boobs anyway. Like a lot of times the whole reason is to see the boobs and then kill. Well, you know what? You can ask to see boobs and you don't have to kill someone.
Okay. Well, let's bring up one that I constantly argue with Cargill about, which is Frozen.
Oh, yeah. Not the musical, which we talk about a lot.
Yeah. I was not at that Butnumathon, but I caught up with it later.
Yeah.
I heard stories.
Yeah. It was a horror movie. It was shown at Butnumathon. It is about a trio, a boyfriend and a girlfriend and their friend who get trapped on a ski lift for basically the weekend, right? Or they don't know, you know, and a snowstorm comes in and it's a survival film. And I bring it up as being problematic in that, oh my God, this woman is so dumb. And Cargill kept coming back to, well, they're all dumb. And I'm like, yes, you do have a point there. But the problem is, when do I get to see a smart woman? Mm-hmm. Because the woman is always dumb. And it wouldn't have taken much for her to not be dumb.
Those are some of my least favorite horror films when it depends on people's stupidity to work.
Well, yeah.
It's precisely. Frustrating. I can't enjoy it because I'm like, you guys are just... The only reason this is terrifying is because you are being idiots.
and it's... I'd much rather... It's really hard to engage with characters who are being dumb, who do not know how to save themselves. Because there, I don't know, there's a little bit of Schadenfreude in all of us, I think. And it's like, well, you don't deserve to live on some point if you're making all these incredibly stupid decisions. And I also think there's a certain awareness of, wow, this is really bad screenwriting because you can't figure out how to make us connect with these characters. And part of that problem is them being stupid.
He's so dumb.
On the flip side of that coin is something like The Thing, the 1982 The Thing with Kurt Russell, and you have a enormously fantastic horror movie about characters who are very, very smart and yet still can't seem to conquer this creature that's coming after
them. Because how scary is that? You're like, what if I did everything right and it just wasn't enough?
Yeah.
it was still going to get you.
This character, this monster is actually better than you and you will not win.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's just so cool.
Maybe the monster was a woman, though. It's a bunch of dudes up in the Arctic, though, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, that movie changes now. I'm like, you know what? She came down there to rule the earth.
I mean, I don't want to talk about all the usual slashers much. I want to, like, talk about a movie that I like that I also acknowledge is a problem.
Well, we can deal with something, say, like Psycho, which I'm trying to figure out. Like, now, I think part of it was the twist of here's your main actress and she's dead sooner than you think.
Yeah.
But it's a little.
Well, I don't think she's stupid, though.
Well, I don't think she's stupid. Yeah. It's just, you know, like, oh, this is an interesting woman with an interesting, like, she's got a thing going on, right? And then, like, oh, no, but the movie's not about her.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the movie's not about her. Like, oh, crap. It was. Oh, I mean, great movie, but like a little bit like, oh, I'm gonna watch this really interesting woman. No, it was not tough. It's like you're going through films like no women. Like I'm going through like the Universal ones. No women. Not really. Though I mean, Bride of Frankenstein is cool because it starts with a preface where it's Mary Shelley telling the story.
Yes,
and it's Elsa Lanchester. As Mary Shelley, and then as the creature. Of course, beyond that, there's no women, except for as something the monster can threaten.
I thought of a problematic one.
Oh, okay.
Bad Biology.
I did not see this
one. I didn't see that one, but I'm already terrified they said Bad Biology.
Well, terrified by the way she said it.
Yeah.
Bad Biology.
Yeah. Okay, it's a Frank Henenlotter film.
Oh, see, I love Basket Case and Frankenhooker. Again, oddly charming.
Yeah,
oddly
yeah.
charming yeah. films.
Yeah, the thing about Hennenlotter is, in a way, he really loves his monsters.
He does. He really I'm a does. Monster fan.
Yeah,
I think
and there's a weird sort
of... No, you're not like a monster fan like that movie that we watched at the last Butnamathon where somebody's like, I want the monsters to be real. No, you don't. Why would you want that?
Why would you want that?
I like that film, but that was a stupid idea. Yeah. I do not want the monsters to be real. I like them on the screen.
Yeah.
So anyway... Bad Biology, which is a Frank Hennenlotter film, and it differs from Frank Hennenlotter's previous things like Basket Case and Brain Damage.
I haven't seen that one.
Brain Damage, I really like. And even Frankenhooker, is that he has a certain affection for these characters, and he takes these very broken characters, and there's a kind of a weird sort of sympathy for him.
Oh, absolutely.
And Bad Biology... Oh, God. Okay, so it's about this woman. Let's see if I can remember the
plot. It looks like
of
it's
this.
Physically hurting you.
Yeah,
I'm terrified.
It's like terrible. No,
she's sort of a listener. She's kind
clenching.
Of hunched, yeah, she's sort of hunched and kind of clenched up. She's like, oh, it's. God, it's a. Like it hurts to like the words are stuck in her throat. She's
a
like,
sheen of nervous sweat is beating her forehead.
Yeah, and God, if I remember right, she has like 7 clitorises and fucks men to death. And she's not a good person at all. I mean, she's just kind of this.
Wait, 7 clear. What
I know, right?
7
clitoris. I think they're in different places on her body too. I can't remember.
I think those are just skin tags. Oh my god! We're gonna do it just like clitoris.
What are you gonna do with just the clitoris? I've got it all flippity and.
This is a mess. This is a mess right here.
Oh, gosh. What do you do with that?
We can edit. No.
No, we won't.
We will keep it.
Yeah. Bonus feature. Subheading clitoris.
There were 7 clitorises, like the 7 hills of Rome. And
so if you like hit all of them, do you get to be Caesar? What?
Yeah.
Got classy all of a sudden.
There's also this guy who is like a prehensile penis, and you'd think that they get together and live happily ever after, but no, she's an awful human being, and he's kind of broken, like his penis has a mind of its own and goes out to kill people.
So it like yanks him along, or is it like leaving his body to go do this?
I like kind of dragging him along. If I remember.
I'm outie.
I mean, half of this could be fever dream. I have no idea.
Megan just did the best gesture because gestures are great.
She kind of slithery roller coaster thing.
Like she popped her little fingers up like 2 little eyeballs, and she wiggled them. I'm outie, like it's talking, and then she like had him like slither on off. Like,
I puppeteered it without a puppet.
There was that horror film that was at Butnamathon.
Oh, don't you freaking mention those Poughkeepsie tapes.
I wasn't actually going there. I was trying to remember.
I just don't even want
to. Poughkeepsie tapes, fuck that movie.
I don't.
That's not even problematic, it's just bullshit is what that is.
Every year I think I'm done. And it comes
can't
out again.
Can't get clean.
There was that one from the 60s. There was one of his exploitation ones where she got raped, but she liked it. And I was just like, why are we... Oh, Harry. Oh.
No, I don't think I saw that. Yeah, that whole like rape revenge tract is just tough. You know, because I'm like, listen, I love a good revenge film. I do. I don't want to do that to get to there. Because it's always so, it's exploitation because, like, they're filming the rape like a sex scene.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I feel like that's the entire point of the film when you can feel it. And it doesn't matter how many people this character ends up killing, destroy, you know, I know what the origin was. I know what the origin was, and that is, though, I did see a film that was a really good, in one version, I guess, American Mary.
Oh, American Mary! It's the Sosna twins.
Yes,
yeah, Sosna.
Or it's they're sisters.
Yeah, they are.
But I forget what
they're sisters. I met them at Fantastic Fest a couple years ago, and they helped shave my head. It was really awesome.
Oh,
yeah, well, they're darlings. They're
this
darlings.
Is like one of the most because there is a rape scene in it, but it is filmed from her perspective, and you really feel it is not a sexual film at all.
Thank
it, move at all. It is like very much like you can feel the. the horror of that act, and you can understand why that affects her. And I don't think this makes her into, because she basically kind of becomes the monster. Mm-hmm. You think she's the victim of the piece, but really she becomes the monster. But it's not just out of that. It's very much her taking, you know, she's like a med student and they treat her like crap. And she finds that she can make money doing underground body modifications. Mm-hmm. The stuff that people want to do, like these two sisters, who I believe are played by the directors, who want to be sewn together. They always want to be together. So it's dealing with that and the criminal element, and then, you know, dealing with her. It was, I think it was one of her professors that rapes her. So that whole idea of also, like, not being able to ascend higher because of this fucking male. And it's this whole party they're throwing. You know, they've done it before. They're going to do it again. And then also the idea that she ends up doing revenge that is almost to the point where you're like, oh my God, that might be too much. Like, what she does to this guy, and yet it's fascinating. And I think she's a fascinating character where it's not just a rote, she's not just good, she's not just bad, she's this full character, and I would recommend it. I think it is a...
Well, I mean, that's the problem with rape in almost any context is, I'm still watching a rape.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of an entertainment.
Yeah.
I think without having prepared a list beforehand, I think, you know, I think it might be easier just to start talking about the good stuff that people
might I tend to concentrate on the good stuff. That's how you have to get through, in a way. It's like, I got to concentrate on stuff I like.
I don't know that I really own any horror films that I find problematic, other than there's just no women in it.
Yeah, that's the They're either all dead, and I'm not really watching that. There's no women in it. Yeah. And then you got the third one where, hey, there's some progressive stuff going on here.
Like, Slither is pretty great because the stereotypical pretty woman who is Elizabeth Banks in that one, and she's very stereotypically like the female in all the ways that you are female, and yet she's still pretty smart and pretty resourceful. And but then you also have the teenage girl who ends up being the one who saves everybody's bacon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I very much enjoy Slither. So I was happy when James Gunn was going to direct Guardians of the Galaxy. Because I'm like, there is an interesting brain. He also co-wrote, I don't know, about Romeo and Juliet, which is the trauma version.
Romeo and Juliet.
Okay.
I forgot about that.
As crazy, like, trauma as that movie is.
Yeah.
It's also, it is Romeo and Juliet. It's very sweet. I actually find it a good movie. Yeah, it's got some lesbian sex and sex in a glass box, you do. With a trauma film. But it's very honest what it is. It actually has scenes. There's actually scenes where they will do it in couplets. Like, there's actual scenes where, not the entire film. And yeah, there's a penis monster in it. But
I'm enjoying the disclaimers. But the thing is, really sweet film. Yeah.
It's a minor miracle that if you watch that film, you go, you know, I feel kind of nice after. And it's the same, but it basically it's just really,
it is weirdly sweet.
Yeah.
Wait. Do they die? Because if it's Romeo and Juliet, they should die.
Well, no, you leave happy. It's trauma. They fixed it.
Okay.
They fixed that story.
That story was broken, and trauma fixed it.
I mean,
with a penis monster and lesbian sex in a glass box.
And maybe you find out they're related, and then it doesn't matter.
Yes.
Maybe they Lannister a bit at the end.
It's true.
And have mutant kids. But they're in love, and it's a happy family. And all the characters are together at the end.
It's so wrong.
So that's a weird gift of his. To take something really... So Slither is the same idea. Something kind of disgusting and horrible, but still, like, you feel pretty good at the end of that film.
No, it's super charming.
Yeah, charming. That's the word.
It helps it as Nathan Fillion. Well, but, I mean, your main lead male character, he's not an idiot and he's not a doofus, but he's not actually all that effective.
It's true. This is true.
It is the women who are, like, kind of getting the shit done and, like, no, by the way, I had a vision when it was in my mouth and this is what's going on and we need to do this.
Yeah, no.
You don't go all woomy unless it puts both in you. And there's so much that is gross about that film. Oh my God. But it's so clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Bill Party.
Let's talk Ginger Snaps.
Yeah.
That's a great film. Also, the sequel.
Ginger Snaps 2 was really...
Was also really pretty solid. But the first Ginger Snaps was really sit up and sing about.
Yeah.
It's a werewolf story featuring two sisters. Now, it's been a really long time since I've seen it. So
Same with me.
Yeah, I'd be hard-pressed to tell you real details about the plot.
But, I mean,
there's
definitely a revenge thread through it. But there's no victimization happening.
It's about the relationship between these two sisters.
In fact, there's empowerment.
Yeah.
and I mean, obviously the metaphors for...
Yeah, you got full moons and coming into woman power. Yeah.
Coming into woman power and ferocity and all of that. And, you know, very thinly veiled subtext. But the idea that a presented in a positive, oddly positive way, that an idea that a woman being powerful should be scary to you a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that you should be scared of us. We are fucking powerful.
Yeah.
Don't fuck us over.
And we've had it with your shit.
And we've had it
with your shit. It's done. It's done.
And that the other sister is like, no, you are crossing a line, and that is a problem, and I want to help you.
Yeah.
Which, of course, leads into Ginger Snaps 2. And Ginger Snaps 2, it's different, but it's still fascinating because she's... What I mostly remember about Ginger Snaps 2 is that ultimately the bad guy is the little girl. And mm-hmm. Do you remember that? And the bad guy is a little girl who's actually kind of an asshole, but then I'm like still oddly pleased as a feminist that look at that.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Here's a little girl who has decided how to solve her problems very effectively.
Yes.
Yeah. I have to admire this. I have to.
Because I kind of feel like, you know, I forget what the sister's name was, the younger sister who's now the main character who's trying to not be a werewolf. It's like, I believe the film has made it clear that this is a losing battle for you.
Yeah.
So at the very least, you could help this little girl out, and she's going to take the choice away from you.
Yeah. Anytime when you're dealing with, like, sisters, which is just, you know, I mean, the other Frozen, how refreshing that the main, like, relationship is sisters. Like, we forget that's a relationship that exists and just isn't explored.
Okay, so I brought up earlier... Jeepers Creepers.
Oh yeah, let's go for that.
It has been a while, but I did see that one.
I mean, it's not great. It's a B-movie, right? It's not like The Thing or anything like
I think
that.
It knows what it is, though.
Yeah, it totally does.
I appreciate
and
that
he's,
film.
He's a creepy, he's pretty creepy, effective monster.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
The concept is pretty sound. He's like, it's a little bit Invader Zim, you know. Mm-hmm. I will take more organs and that will make me more human.
Go to the office. You have head pigeons.
Zip, go to the office. You have head pigeons. The cooing. The cooing. I love that episode. That's one of my favorite Zip episodes. But what I liked about it was, it was siblings.
Mm, yeah.
It was a brother and sister.
Because so easily it could have been a couple. They could have written as a couple. I'm like, well, I've seen this.
Yeah.
I know how this is going to go, basically.
Yeah. But it was a brother and sister, which made it interesting. Yep. And the supernatural element with the seer, and that's bringing another female character in, so you end up with a trio of characters where only one is male.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the man who consistently does the stupid shit.
Yeah,
it's the man who goes down the pipe. And then she's standing there going, and she says it, this is the point in the horror movie where this is stupid, why would you do this?
I think they had to make them siblings, because if it was a couple, I'm like, well, I'm done, I have no ties to you, so I'm leaving. Yeah. Go die on your own. A sibling, you kind of have to.
Yeah.
Duh, crap.
And I mean, and sorry, spoilers, but at the end, when somebody has to die, it's the boy who dies. And so there is a lot of very conscious gender bending in that movie that made me just go, well, this is refreshing.
Yeah, I didn't quite know where it was going, which is always fun in a horror film, you know? Yeah. Sometimes you know the template. It doesn't have to be bad to know where you're going. Sometimes you enjoy the rhythm. Other times, like, give me something new.
Well, and it's the girl who's at the wheel when they run over the monster.
Yeah.
And she puts it in reverse. And runs over it backwards. It's like,
More.
Double tap that shit. I'm going to kill him. I'm not going to kill him. I'm going to kill him. Did you see Jeepers Creepers 2?
I feel like I did, and I remember nothing, but they were, like, in a building.
Yeah.
Which isn't very specific.
It's not as good, but it's fascinating because it basically acknowledges that somebody knows what he is and that he's immortal, but that he cocoons and goes to sleep or something.
Oh, yeah.
And so he keeps the cocoon and is just basically watching it, waiting for it to wake up again to kill it again.
It's his job. It's like, he's going to wake up, I'll kill it.
Yeah, I'll be an old man when it wakes up again, but I'm going to fucking kill this motherfucker. Mm-hmm. That's the part I remember. The rest was pretty forgettable.
We all have hobbies. It's a very lonely convention for him, because it's him. But every year he's there with that cocoon. Cocoon con.
Oh, is it every once a year he wakes up?
You know, I feel like it was almost like... I feel like it wasn't 1 year. It was like 7 or 17. It was some chunk of time.
It was like a cicada.
Yeah. Like a horror cicada. That wanted your orchid.
Land of the horror cicadas.
Okay, so somebody talk about a film they like then, because I...
Mama.
Oh, Mama. Okay. I did. I did love Mama.
Is this
Mama.
The Korean one?
Oh, no. I'm talking about the one...
That was Mother.
Yeah.
Sorry. Mama, this is... We saw this at...
Oh, Mama. Yeah. Mama, I'm sorry. I had a... What? Why would my brain do that? Mama.
It was
Mama.
Like this great horror fairy tale. It was very much a dark fairy tale.
Oh, yeah. It was very fantastical. Yeah.
And you think, it's Jaime Lannister, right? It's Nicolai
something.
Foster Waldo. Yeah.
Whatever your name is, yeah. Mr. Handsome Cheekbones.
And you kind of think, oh, okay, so it's the dude. He's going to be kind of the main character. But they switched it up, and it's all about, like, motherhood and what constitutes a mother. You have, like, two mothers. This woman who really was not planning on being a mother. You know, but she was kind of like, I love this guy, and we have to take care of his nieces. And then you have this supernatural being who is made of motherhood. Like, that is, like, if the idea of, like, why you have a ghost is you have unfinished business or an emotion, hers is motherhood. You know, my child was taken from me, so I need to take, you know. And the thing is, when we're first introduced to her, she takes care of these girls.
Yeah, these girls survive because this entity is caring for them for years.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, not just, they survive because this entity intervenes.
Yes.
Because that is some, it's so true when you become a parent, it's really hard to watch children in danger. And when you realize what that father's about to do, I'm just like, because when that movie played, Teddy was... How many years ago? She was like 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And we leave her at home to go to Butnumathon. Mm-hmm. And there's this little blonde little girl, and he's putting a gun to her head. And I'm just like, may not be able to watch this.
You know, like Jamie and Jen. Jamie's like, Jen had to leave and watch from the hall.
Wow.
Because she just, you know, to become a mother. I'm like, I can only imagine, because that must be all the buttons.
It's and I'm like, I have a feeling that this is a small part. It's at the beginning, and I'll be... I don't know what's good. It was very uncomfortable.
Effective, because it's hitting you exactly where...
Well, and it means that immediately it's also giving you sympathy for what you know is the monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're actually like, yeah, but... Yeah, oh my God. Which is great. So
villains are always more compelling when you can understand their motivations.
Oh, absolutely.
When they have compelling motivations that you have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That man
needed to flip and die.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. He was a monster.
Yeah. Sorry. I mean, there's a reason why Magneto is a very compelling villain in the Marvel Universe, is because you can see where he's going.
He's got a valid point. Yeah.
He's got a point. You know, I don't know. I mean, sometimes, like, he's making a pretty good argument.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
In a lot of
ways, he's right. And in Mama, you know, this mother entity is the same way.
Yeah. So then you end up having, like, two mothers fighting for basically how to take care of the kids.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. They both want to take care of these two girls.
Yeah.
You know, but like they're, you know, you've got like the supernatural. She'd prefer to take them to the cabin and have them on all fours eating berries, because that's how you roll in the forest when you're a spirit. And then you have this other woman like learning, like, wait a second, though, I do want to take care of these girls, and learning how to, and like finding, like, I'm not a mother, but I assume when you become a mother first, you're terrified.
Oh, you
are. Yeah. Terrified.
Right. So it's almost like this movie is also about the terror of being a new mother. Uh-huh. Like, what am I going to do? And, like, because she actually, like, has to make sure these girls don't, if not die, be taken away.
Yeah.
She doesn't, like, who knows what's going to happen? Because she doesn't quite know what this creature is.
Or be institutionalized. Because there's a very real concern that these children are not going to assimilate.
Yeah.
Given that they have been so isolated. And that's the thing that the human point of view is the ghost mother, the Witchy Woods mother. Witchy Woods mother.
I like that.
Yeah.
What she wants them, but they established that she was insane, which they needed to do, because any truly conscious and coherent being would be like, there's no future for you living in this cabin eating berries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. You may grow up, but you're not going to have a life. You're not going to fall in love, procreate, or, you know, even the basic human instincts, right? None of those are going to happen. You're just going to be my toy.
Yeah, she's pure emotion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, there's no... All she is that need to have those girls and protect them. Yeah. I don't know if there's anything beyond that. Who knows
Oddly, she gets a perfect ending.
Yeah, I appreciate a movie that's willing to... It is a dark ending, I don't think it's a, it doesn't destroy me ending. If you almost feel like, okay, if it has to end this way.
It's actually a beautiful.
Yeah.
It's like a divorce. It's like a divorce in that, you know, I went through a custody battle with my two brothers and the judge asked us, well, which parent do you want to live with? What is it you want? Well, Brian and I wanted to live with mom and Bryce wanted to live with dad, and that, and all the other bullshit of the custody hearing aside, what the judge ended up deciding was Brian and Wendy are going to go live with Eve and Bryce is going to go live. Their kids are going to get what they want.
Right.
And that's what happens at the end.
Yeah. It's interesting that like these girls have agency at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know what? That's, you've been through this unimaginable thing. What do you need?
Let's do one more and then we'll go to the questions.
Oh, the questions.
Okay. So let's do your next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though I think we're kind of have to talk about like
one of the great joys.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to have to unfortunately spoil one of the great joys of the movie, which is not the ending, but a wonderful reveal. Yeah. So if you,
go see it, just see it.
Yeah. Go see it.
If you haven't seen it yet, stop the podcast and go watch it and then come back and listen to it.
We'll wait. Yeah. We got a lot to talk about. It's an hour and a half long, so
yeah, seriously.
Come back.
Yeah.
Come back. All right. Seriously. But we're going to talk about things that will spoil it for you. And if you decide to listen, I'm just saying movie's not going to be as awesome. You will still enjoy it, but it just will not be as awesome the first time you watch it.
Yeah, so your next is this 10 Little Indians movie.
Oh, yeah.
What I call a 10 Little Indians movie, where you've got a bunch of people set up to all die. One by one in various fashion.
In various gruesome ways. Yeah.
And it's in one of those like old houses like Agatha Christie would be at.
Yeah,
this is a house we don't use a lot, and it's big, and it's a lot of space, but we're all going to be in here in this one time. You know, we all have issues and family. It's like a setup like this Agatha Christie.
Yeah, and this movie came out, was officially released last year, but it had been sitting on a shelf a couple of years, so some people had seen it in Fantastic Fest like 4 years ago, and they're going, oh my god, it's amazing, and this is all I've heard from Fantastic Festers for years, and now, then finally last year I got to see it. And this 10 Little Indians movie, it's got Barbara Crampton in one of the roles.
Yeah,
You know, just that's a sweet little nod to horror
history.
Scream queen history. And Barbara Crampton's awesome. But
she looks amazing. They had to actually try to make her look older.
Yeah, I'm like, damn, man. Screaming keeps the face supple.
Apparently.
Yes. And so they're this family, and, you know, like the son brings home a new girlfriend, and, you know, it's like a family and as accessory boyfriends and girlfriends, and some people who are part of the family and some who aren't, are all in this house, and there are other people who are clad in black and wearing these animal masks going through the neighborhood killing people.
Yeah.
And eventually they get to this house. And there's a point in the movie about half an hour in, you know, during this half an hour, you're going, not quite, you know, this looks pretty standard, right?
And you're learning to hate some of the people. Like, I could go with a lot of these guys dying right now.
Some of them. Actually, one of the actors is Ty West, director Ty West?
Yes.
He didn't direct the movie, but he's playing a role in the movie. But anyway, and you don't necessarily like many of these people. So you're going like, whatever, I've seen this. And then there's a point about half an hour in where all these characters are at dinner and suddenly one of them gets shot through the window with an arrow and it's on.
Yeah.
And so there's like a full-on assault in this dinner scene. And one of the women in this family scene steps up and starts murdering the fuck out of the assailants.
She's Sharni Vinson?
Yes.
The actress?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. She's like one of the girlfriends who she's not related. She's like one of the guy's girlfriends.
Well, there have been subtle hints. She's like, what are you talking about? I think your family is, you have no idea what it's like to grow up.
You get little ideas that she's seen stuff.
She's seen stuff. She says something even early on that you're like, why? Well, that was an interesting take on that.
Yeah.
And then when the arrow comes through, she's like, you need to get down.
Yeah.
You need to cover yourself. You need to do this. Why would you do that? Go
get this. She takes charge.
Yeah. She takes an immediate charge. And they're all just looking at her like, What the
Why
hell?
Do you know this?
Take that board, put it over there. Yeah. And she is just taking charge, and she gets her hands on one of the assailants and just bashes his brains in.
Yeah, she's just like, excuse me, you will die now.
Yeah,
double tap indeed. She's like, I'm going to kill you. Yeah. I'm just going to kill you. I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, yeah, she gets the job done.
Yeah, and it turns out she's like the daughter of a survivalist, and she just... No, she's this super competent, knows all this survivalist stuff.
And these poor animal mask bastards have no idea.
She's like, we need to get away from the windows.
Yeah.
We need to lock the windows and doors. We need to get someplace secure. She's like, and they're like, what about the basement? No, not the basement. There's no way out of that. That's stupid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, there's no exits from that. That's stupid. We're not going to the basement. And then she's just like, oh, you need to go up there and you need to check that. And they're just, why do you know these things? Just do it. Shut up.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing is when that happened, I was in a AMC in the middle of the week. There were like 9 people in the audience and every single one of us just went.
Yeah.
Just dumbfounded. It's like, oh my God, that's amazing.
The energy just spontaneous switches, the movie applause. Changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a completely different, all of a sudden you're like pumped because you're like, oh, okay, you know, now she's hunting them.
Yeah.
And she is better at everything than these guys are.
Yeah.
You get this, they start as these scary, you know, animal ass guys. They're unknown. You're like, oh my God, who are these dudes? What are their powers?
Creepy.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, and then like they start being demystified. Like, oh, they're just dudes in masks.
They're just dudes in masks and think they're badass and they're not.
Yeah, exactly. And she is.
And when she gets her hands on you, she's like, I will take you out.
I think one of the guys are like brothers or something. He's like, oh no, my poor dead brother. I'm like, oh no. And again, it's competence in a movie.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes it's just
so
like
satisfying.
Yeah, like thank you. Like I'm an adult. We're all adults watching this. Let's make some good choices, people.
It's time for the questions. We've got a good amount of material and we were fairly on topic.
I know.
Efficient.
Yeah.
Mic drop.
Boom. Boom. Double mic drop.
Excellent radio, my friend.
Thank you.
Radio. All right. So the first question is, who are you?
Like just as in general or as a, like a human being on this planet,
you know,
trying to live my life like everybody else.
You can also give us your full name.
Yeah, I am Megan Murphy.
Okay.
Yes.
And what do you do?
Ooh, I draw stuff and sometimes I write stuff. I design stuff and I get around.
Megan does a wonderful webcomic called Kawaii Not, mm-hmm. which we will link in the show notes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And her artwork is adorable.
Yeah, Megan's...
And twisted.
You specialize in adorable artwork.
Yeah, thank you.
Adorable,
Murphy Pop
twisted.
Is my other stuff. Like,
yeah, Murphy Pop.
And actually, I just... I just... Before Convergence, 2 days before, I just handed in the first draft of a book I'm writing and illustrating.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I get the title right because I've been working on this. It's The Good Geek Guide, Merit Badges for Nerdy Excellence. So basically, it's like a scout guide, but for you being a good geek.
Okay.
Both hopefully humorous and also like, don't be a dick. Like that's like my main, you know. And then there'll also be stickers because you'll actually be able to, you're going to be able to work the book like an actual workbook. Like there's 40 badges in 4 different categories and you can go through and there's going to be checklists. There's some diagrams. There's fill in the blanks.
Diagrams? I love diagrams.
Oh, yeah. There's too many illustrations because I was like, this is a good idea. I'm going to illustrate this heavily. Damn.
You're kidding.
This is a stupid idea.
I'm super excited by this book. I totally need it.
Yeah. Yes. So I think it should be out if everything goes right. It should be the end of the year, depending on the publishing schedule.
You might have copies with you at Button on the Thumb.
Oh, God. I will see. You know, I can barely think about it because I'm very proud of this book, but I'm also like it is more than I thought I could do. You know, it's one of those things where you challenge yourself and then in the middle of it, you're like, this is stupid. I can't do this.
Who the hell thought I could do this? Yeah. What an asshole thought I could do this?
Yeah, this book is now Megan's an Idiot by Megan Murphy. 40 badges about how stupid I am.
By the way, dumb.
So, yeah, dumb. She'll see.
So, question number 3. What is inside your pleasure dome?
Your
personal pleasure dome.
Okay, 1 Barry Bostwick. Megaforce kiss all the way.
Yeah, we just Megaforce kiss this rock band microphone. That
Something about that hair on. And that headband and the smile.
And the blue eyes.
Yeah, like everything's going to be okay. How can you be upset? Just stare into that man's eyes. Even today. We saw this movie, Blast Vegas. It's a sci-fi. And after they changed their spelling, sci-fi movie, about how much they care. And it's not great, but he's a lounge singer. Has a martini the entire time. And anytime he's on the screen, you're like, sir, that's an actor right there. Because he's not phoning it in. He's not phoning.
That is a profession.
Yeah, he's acting against Frankie Muniz. Just like, who's apparently the lead, but you keep forgetting because Barry Bostwick's standing next to him, being all Bostwicky. So what's that? It's some good bad movies. It's Donuts with Sprinkles.
Ooh, that sounds really super good right now.
Yeah, right. Don't put filling in it. Don't waste my time. It's got to be that classic. Maybe even like pink frosting, like Simpson style.
Okay.
There, and those sprinkles. There. There's your happiness right there.
All right, then, final question. What is a recommendation you have for our communal pleasure dome?
Something that should be in the communal. This is a tough one because it has to be for everybody.
It could be anything. Well, it doesn't have to be for everybody. It's like, here, I submit for your consideration.
Well, of course, I'm going to go movie because that's what's on my brain right now. And I think you've both seen this, but I love Vincent Price. And I think it'll have to be the About Old Dr. Fives.
Yay!
It just, everyone needs to see it and have it live in their heart. It's like Art Nouveau horror.
Yeah.
And it's a revenge. Like, I love revenge and I love monsters. And it's mm-hmm. both. And I love Vincent Price.
I mean, it really is sort of that French New Wave
Art Nouveau horror.
It is the weirdest, most beautiful thing.
It's the most, and it's so anachronistic, and
you can't figure out what time it's supposed to take place in, and it doesn't really matter.
And by the time you get to, it's a left-hand screw, I think.
with the unicorn and they're unscrewing the guy off it. It's got that beautiful British dry humor.
So funny and so weird.
Yeah, it's that weirdness that does it for me.
And then there's Valnavia, the woman who walks around and says absolutely nothing. And
I don't even know if she's is she real? Is she a robot? Is she the spirit of vengeance? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't care.
Pick an interpretation for this time and pick a different one the next time.
She just shows up, helps the mayhem. Yeah. And then I guess goes back to wherever she came from. Yeah, I don't think she died. I don't believe that.
Well, I think the sequel didn't he have an assistant?
Yeah, it was a different actress. Yeah. Actress like it was Carolyn Monroe, but they called her.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's okay. The sequel's okay. It's not like bad. It just doesn't have the same magic.
I choose to believe that Theater of Blood is the sequel to Abominable Dr.
Fives. Okay. You gotta put Theater of Blood in there too. Like make this a two pack.
Okay, two pack with Theater of Blood.
Because that's got Diana Rigg.
Yes.
Which is the Queen of Thorns herself.
Yeah, and she's amazing.
It is. Hey, you like Shakespeare? You like horror?
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
That's right.
There you go.
Boom. That's
triple mic drop. I had to juggle them for a while just so I could drop them all at once.
All right, we're gonna wrap this up because I'm getting punchy.
Yo.
So thank you, listeners, for listening to another episode of Xanadu Cinema Pleasure Dome. This has been Wendy, that has been Melissa, and that has been Megan,
who we are
so pleased to finally have on the podcast. Yay.
Hurrah.
And next week we'll talk about something else.
All right.
Yay. Bye.
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 Thank you for joining us in the Xanadu Cinema Pleasure Dome. Our theme song was written by Tim Wick and Jeffrey Brown and recorded and mastered by Chad Dutton. New episodes arrive every Thursday. You can find us on iTunes and on Stitcher. You can also visit us at xanaducinema.com, follow us on Twitter at Xanadu Cinema, and like us on Facebook at Xanadu Cinema Pleasure Dome.
Yeah, you know, I can do a leveler. on this, and it will increase the level of the voices.
Melissa's got the shiz.
Yeah, I got the magic.
I got the power.
Thank you.